Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Copper Bullets, the four-part series from Amazing Sports Stories, is available now.
Zambia was considered as an underdog.
Are we going to do the impossible here?
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Nick Miles, and in the early hours of Wednesday, the 19th of June, these are our main stories. President Biden has announced a new policy that would protect hundreds of thousands of undocumented spouses of US citizens from deportation. The Russian President Vladimir Putin has arrived in North Korea, the first visit there in nearly a quarter of a century. Also in this podcast,
the extreme wealth of the few comes at the expense of the poverty and financial insecurity of an unspeakably large number of people.
The Austrian heiress giving away her millions. Immigration is likely to be a key issue in November's presidential election in the United States. And now President Biden has announced a new policy to protect about 500,000 undocumented migrants who are married to U.S. citizens from being deported.
But today I'm announcing new measures to clarify and speed up work visas to help people, including dreamers, who have graduated from U.S. colleges and universities, landed jobs in high-demand, high-skilled professions that we need to have grow to see our economy grow. I want to keep building the strongest economy in the world with the best workforce in the world.
Mr. Biden also said the change would streamline the current system, which he said was cumbersome and separated families. I got more details from our Washington correspondent, Nomi Iqbal.
This policy is aimed at people who've been living in the United States for more than a decade, and so they've built their lives and families here. If you marry an American, generally that provides a pathway to US citizenship eventually. But if you cross into the country illegally, you would have to return to your home country to complete the process for a green card. And so that can take years and years, and it also means you'd have to split up your family. So what President Biden is doing with this new program is basically allowing families to remain together in the US whilst that person pursues legal status. But there are some conditions. So the spouses must have lived here for 10 years and been married as of June 17th. It's also worth pointing out that the policy will benefit the children of undocumented spouses who became stepchildren to American citizens. So it's thought to benefit around 50,000 children.
And Nomia, remind us how this kind of approach contrasts with Donald Trump's promises about immigration.
Joe Biden does want to tighten access to asylum, but he also wants to let some long-term undocumented people apply for residency in the United States. He's trying to strike this sort of balanced tone. Whereas Donald Trump is totally going one direction. He's campaigning on a almost entirely punitive crackdown. So he's already saying, I'm going to unleash the biggest mass deportation in US history, and deploying military, police units, creating big detention camps. And so his rhetoric has become pretty inflammatory as well. There was a campaign rally he held in Michigan. He made these claims that immigrants were coming in by the millions. He was using terms like destruction of American suburbs, poisoning the blood of Americans and so forth.
Nomia, President Biden this evening was saying he's not interested in playing politics with border immigration, but fixing it. But there is no doubt from what you've just been saying that the border promises and policies are a vote winner or a vote loser, aren't they?
They are. Polls consistently suggest that it's often a number one concern for voters. I mean, it's certainly in the top few. And President Biden did 2 weeks ago, if you remember, he unveiled this major crackdown at the US-Mexico border, which basically cuts off access to asylum for people who cross into America illegally. And he was criticised by members of his own party, the more progressive members, for not having a more humane approach. And so I think this programme attempts to answer that call. But there is no doubt that immigration is a political vulnerability for him because he is acting with just months to go before the November presidential election.
Nomia Iqbal in Washington. Ashleigh de Azevedo is the head of American Families United. That's a group that supports mixed status families. Her husband is also undocumented and so will be one of the people that will benefit from this new policy. Noel Al-Maghafi first asked her for a reaction to President Biden's announcement.
We're very optimistic and hopeful. We don't know all of the details yet. So we believe in the days and weeks ahead, our work will continue, our advocacy work will continue to make sure that all of the families we've been fighting for are included in this. But we are very optimistic and excited. This is historical.
But also, these plans impact you personally, don't they? Because you've been married to someone who's undocumented for over 12 years now. So tell me how, you know, the difficulties you faced.
Correct. We've been married for 18 years. My husband is from Brazil, and we met, fell in love. He's a great man. We have a child together. Unfortunately, though, this undocumented status has prevented him from being able to see his parents back in Brazil. He has not seen his mom since he was 18 years old. You know, obviously now he's a full-grown man. He missed his father's funeral because of the inability to travel. So it's been very, very difficult, to say the least. It affects everything we do in our daily life, but we're hoping that this is the day that those things start to change.
I mean, that must have been really hard, but I'm guessing it also impacts, you know, where he can work. Where has he been working up until now?
Absolutely. We've been relying on my income because he does not have work authorization.
Can you even go on holidays as a family?
Only locally. We really don't travel far at all.
But I guess this decision, you know, if it's implemented, it's been a long time coming. What are the first things you want to do?
The first thing I want to do? Wow, I haven't thought about that. I think probably travel to Brazil so my husband can see his mother and I can meet my mother-in-law.
Ashleigh de Azevedo, spouse of an undocumented migrant in the US and head of American Families United. The International Organization for Migration says nearly 600,000 people have now been displaced by gang violence in Haiti. That's an increase of 60% since March. The UN agency says it's a direct consequence of years of spiralling conflict between armed gangs. Will Grant reports.
The latest assessment from the UN's International Organization for Migration is an important dose of reality for anyone who thought things were returning to normal in the beleaguered Caribbean nation. For almost 600,000 people forced from their homes by the violence, life remains extremely tough. Not only are they no longer able to live in their communities after their neighbourhoods became too dangerous, many also lost their jobs and homes in the process. Thousands of children and young people have been forced out of their schooling as their families live in temporary accommodation and struggle to find enough food and clean water each day.
Will Grant. Next, Boeing's chief executive, Dave Calhoun, faced tough questioning on Tuesday about the safety culture at the firm during an appearance before a congressional committee in Washington. The committee chairman, Senator Richard Blumenthal, said it was a moment of reckoning. He accused the US plane maker of continuing to put profit before people. Mr. Calhoun said Boeing had taken action to ensure there could be no repeat of an accident in January, in which a fuselage panel fell off an Alaska Airlines plane.
Much has been said about Boeing's culture. We've heard those concerns loud and clear. Our culture is far from perfect, but we are taking action and we are making progress. We understand the gravity and we're committed to moving forward with transparency and accountability.
Before the hearing began, relatives of victims of two deadly plane crashes involving Boeing 737 MAX aircraft held up pictures of their loved ones. The Russian President Vladimir Putin has arrived in North Korea. He was greeted off the plane by the country's leader, Kim Jong-un. Mr. Putin has praised Pyongyang for firmly supporting the war in Ukraine. Our correspondent Shaima Khalil reports from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
For the first time in more than two decades, Vladimir Putin has landed in Pyongyang. Images and footage shared by the Russian state-owned news agency RIA Novosti have shown banners welcoming Vladimir Putin along the freeway in the North Korean capital, lined with propaganda posters. The friendship between North Korea and Russia is eternal, says one banner outside Pyongyang's Sunan International Airport. Another reads, "We warmly welcome comrade Russian President Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin." The relationship between Mr. Putin and North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un has developed significantly after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. North Korea needs help with space technology after its recent failure to put a second spy satellite into orbit.
Shyama Khalil in Seoul. Well, the US Secretary of State Antony Blinken has expressed concern about this visit because of Pyongyang's military support for Moscow.
Russia tried in desperation to develop and to strengthen relations with countries that can provide it with what it needs to continue the war of aggression that it started against Ukraine. North Korea is providing significant munitions to Russia and other weapons for use in Ukraine.
For more on the significance of the visit to North Korea by the Russian president, I spoke to Vitaly Shevchenko from BBC Monitoring.
For Vladimir Putin, the reasons for going to North Korea are both pragmatic and symbolic. On a symbolic level, he is keen to show that, look, I've got friends, I can go places, I can travel and be greeted and celebrated, even if it's North Korea, which has been a pariah on the international stage for decades. Now, on a practical level, the thinking is that Vladimir Putin is keen to secure more weapons supplies from North Korea, ammunition supplies. And this is something that we think has been going on for months. There are satellite images showing shipments of containers from North Korea to Russia, presumably, that's according to South Korea, containing ammunition rounds. Also, debris found in Ukraine suggests that Russia has been using North Korean ballistic missiles against cities such as Kharkiv. So there is evidence that Russia has been buying munitions from North Korea in breach of UN sanctions, which Russia had voted for before. Now, all of those agreements are out of the way as far as Russia is concerned. Both Moscow and Pyongyang deny engaging in weapons trade, but there are very good reasons for them to do that.
For President Putin to make his first visit in 24 years to North Korea, it might suggest a dire need of armaments, if indeed that is what's going on, from North Korea. Do we know how dependent Russia might be on armaments from places like North Korea?
Well, not very, but at this stage, every little helps. Munitions rounds and less sophisticated missiles is something that Russia has learned to produce by the thousand, by tens of thousands. So that's not a huge problem for Russia. But at no stage will either Russia or Ukraine be in a situation, well, we'll look, we've got enough, we don't need anything more. So whatever Russia can secure in terms of weapons from Iran, North Korea, that helps. And it's true that Russians will remember the time when there were more countries willing to cooperate with Russia than just North Korea, Iran and a handful of others. So from that point of view, optics look different, but for years, Russians have been told that Moscow is keen to engage in cooperation with all countries of the world, put an end to Western dominance. Vladimir Putin has been saying that he's keen to develop what he calls a multipolar world.
What might North Korea get out of this from Russia?
Technology, first of all, economic assistance, food, maybe. The fact is, we don't really know, but it's something that Russia is in a position to offer, and it's reasonable to assume that this is what North Korea will be asking for.
Vitaly Shevchenko. Now, just imagine you've inherited more than $26 million. What exactly would you do with your fortune? For most of us, all sorts of luxurious pursuits and purchases spring to mind. But for the 32-year-old Marlene Engelhorn, that question was not theoretical. Her solution: to give the money away. And now a citizens group of 50 people has decided how the Austro-German heiress will do it. I got more from our correspondent in Vienna, Bethany Bell.
Well, Marlene Engelhorn made big headlines because she was going to give away the bulk of her inheritance from her grandmother, 25 million euros, that's $26.8 million. And she was going to appoint a panel of people to decide how the money should be spent. And she is a descendant of the founder of a very big German chemical and pharmaceutical company, Friedrich Engelhorn. And her grandmother left her a great deal of money back in September 2022. Since then, she had said she had wanted to hand out most of that inheritance.
And what has this group of 50 people decided to do with the money?
This is a group that was picked by a pollster to be representative of Austrian society. They have determined that the money should go to 77 different organisations. So charities, some left-wing think tanks, social groups, climate groups. The smallest amount of money is going to an initiative which reports on climate change, and the largest sum of money, 1.6 million euros, is going to something called the Austrian Nature Conservation Federation.
And Bethany, let's listen to a clip from Marlene speaking recently about why she decided to get rid of her money like this.
Ich stoße gar keine Debatte an. Ich beteilige mich an einem bestehenden Diskurs, der teilweise jahrzehntelang geführt wird.
I'm not starting a debate at all. I'm taking part in an existing discourse that has been going on for decades. Only I'm being listened to a much greater extent because I'm rich myself. Income distribution works in such a way that if there's extreme wealth on one side, there's extreme poverty on the other. In other words, the extreme wealth of the few comes at the expense of the poverty and financial insecurity of an unspeakably large number of people.
And Ms. Engelhorn has said it's now up to politicians to take on the question of redistribution of wealth. The inherited wealth, she said, contradicts every democratic principle.
Bethany Bell. Still to come.
Would you like anything else?
No. Cancel.
Your total is 1138.
No, that's not correct.
An AI shambles that led to some very out there hamburger combos.
I'm Crassy Twig from the Global Jigsaw podcast, where we are asking, is the Islamic State group a threat once more? 10 years since they declared the establishment of a caliphate, the jihadists are claiming to be behind a spate of recent terror attacks.
You cannot ignore the danger of IS. When you're not looking, they will rebound and regroup.
The Global Jigsaw from BBC Monitoring looks at the world through the lens of its media. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Residents in two towns, Jiga and Karanyo, in Ethiopia's restive Amhara region, say the army has summarily executed more than 20 civilians. The authorities have not responded to the claims. From Addis Ababa, our correspondent Kalkaran Yibeltel has the details.
Residents of Jiga and Karanyo towns told the BBC that security forces had executed several civilians, including teachers, shooting them at close range. The incidents followed clashes between members of the army and local Fanno militias. The BBC has not independently confirmed the killings, and getting a picture of the true extent of the ongoing violence in parts of the Amhara region has been extremely difficult. The UN's Human Rights Council reports that more than 700 civilians were killed in the region last year, most of them by Ethiopian government forces.
Kalkaran Yibeltel in Ethiopia. Researchers have found a way of identifying whether someone is likely to develop the neurological disease Parkinson's years before they show symptoms. Scientists in Britain and Germany used artificial intelligence to measure the concentration of certain proteins in the blood, which can provide an early indication. It could lead to the development of a simple finger prick test. This report from our health reporter, Philippa Roxby.
There are no treatments available to slow or stop Parkinson's, although therapies can help people manage symptoms such as tremors, movement and memory problems. The disease affects nearly 10 million people worldwide and more than 150,000 in the UK. With the help of a machine learning tool, the researchers identified 8 major proteins in the blood most likely to indicate who would develop the neurological condition. They were then able to correctly predict that happening in 16 people, in some cases 7 years before symptoms began. Patients are still being followed up to confirm the accuracy of the test, and larger trials are now needed in different groups of people. The study author, Professor Kevin Mills from University College London, explained its potential.
If we have this test that can predict Parkinson's or people who are certainly at risk of Parkinson's disease, you can identify more. They can go into more trials. The trials can be shorter because there's no test for Parkinson's disease. But if you have a biomarker and you can measure those things going up and down, you can much quicker to see if those therapeutic interventions are working.
The charity Parkinson's UK said the blood test was a major step forward in the search for a non-invasive, patient-friendly test. The researchers now plan to create an even simpler test, where a finger prick drop of blood on a card can be posted to a lab. But this is likely to take some years to develop.
Philippa Roxby. Now, we are often hearing that artificial intelligence is already much smarter than we are and is on the verge of taking our jobs. But the hope is that it might make life blissfully simple in the process. And what could be a better example of that than it seamlessly taking your order in a fast food drive-through? Well, McDonald's has been trying out exactly that, but safe to say it's gone a little wrong. Here's Alfie Habersham.
Welcome to McDonald's. May I take your order, please?
Forget about the stress of pushing past hungry queues or having to defend your table, because you've not even set foot outside your own car and a Big Mac is at your fingertips. But maybe the only thing that could take it to the next level is not even having to speak to another human being. Well, as usual, McDonald's is one step ahead, because now you can drive past a large screen mumbling your desires and AI will do the rest. And so far, people have been really enjoying it. Well, I'd be laughing too if I was being cooked up 230 Chicken McNuggets. And that's because the McDonald's robot seems to have a bit of a mind of its own.
No, cream packet, no! I just want a large water and a cup of ice cream. Not a ketchup packet, oh my God!
Okay, so maybe the menu has got a bit samey over the years, but ice cream and ketchup. Having said that, ice cream topped with bacon does sound a bit more tempting. But either way, you're probably not getting what you actually asked for.
Would you like anything else?
No. Cancel.
If everything looks correct, your total is $11.38.
No.
Go forward to the pay
window. No, that's not correct.
Of course, it's not the only US restaurant chain that's been looking to slim down costs recently, especially after California passed a new minimum wage of $20 an hour for fast food workers in April. But McDonald's says, for now, that its AI waiter is getting the sack from the 100 restaurants that it was being tested. It gave no reason for the decision, but perhaps for once, us human beings just do it better.
Alfie Habersham. Now, have a listen to this. And that is Calm Down by the 24-year-old Nigerian singer Rima. It has become the most streamed Afrobeat song in the US after earning more than 1 billion on-demand streams there, according to the music monitoring platform Chartdata. This comes after Rima partnered with the US singer Selena Gomez for a remix of the 2022 song, which hit the billion plays mark on the streaming app Spotify. That remix is currently the most watched music video by a Nigerian artist on YouTube, with nearly 894 million views. James Reynolds spoke to DJ Edu, who presents the BBC World Service show This Is Africa, featuring the hottest Afrobeat sounds from all corners of Africa. He asked him, why has this song by the Nigerian singer Rima become so successful?
It's quite a catchy song, and it's one of those sing-along. If you look back at pop culture and pop history, and you look at some of the songs that were big back in the day, and you think to yourself, why did I like this song? This one kind of like ticks that box. It's like, it's so catchy. It's so repetitive. And you can learn, anyone can learn the lyrics. You don't need to go and looking for the lyrics to be able to sing it.
And was this song already going to be a hit? Or did the fact that Selena Gomez gives it that extra push in America, did that make a difference?
I look at it as, you know, she just added a bit of sauce because she comes from a market which also has a lot of listenership, and she has a big following as well. So it did help. These collaborations, I think, are the ones that are catapulting Afrobeat to higher, newer heights.
You've interviewed Rima for your own BBC show. Tell us what he's like.
When I first met him, he was quite shy. I was actually introduced to him by De Prince, who actually found him and honed his skills for about a year, and he brought me this young man. He's like, yeah, I see something in him. He's really talented. And, you know, he had an EP out at the time called Rema. It had a very big song called Corny and Do Maybe, which were doing the rounds, and he hadn't really grown into his own. It's really good to see him grow to become a real big pop star worldwide and fill up big venues.
And of course, Afrobeats is huge, not just in parts of Africa, but in so many parts of the world, and now in the United States as well. What is it about the genre that makes it travel so well as music?
I think patterns in music repeat themselves. There was a time when British pop was really big, German techno and trance, because it was very acceptable and very, you know, appealing and easy to listen to. It's very easygoing. With Afrobeats, because the music is so easygoing and it's so simple and it's centered around melody and having a good time, I think after the 2019 debacle that happened in the world, I think Afrobeats is such a refreshing piece of music. I think it's just an uplifting thing that makes people just think of the good times.
Baby, calm down, calm down. Yo, this your body, it puts in my heart for lockdown, for lockdown. DJ Edu from the BBC World Service show This Is Africa, talking to James Reynolds. And that is all from us for now, but there will be a new edition of the Global News podcast later on. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. You can also find us on X at Global News Pod. This edition was mixed by Caroline Driscoll. The producer was Liam McSheffrey. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Nick Miles, and until next time, goodbye.